It's your boy, The Voice, and you're listening to The Voice of the DHL. Last time I checked, we supposed to be getting one podcast a week. But I was a little slow getting out that last episode, so I didn't want to cheat the process. Hope y'all having a good week, because last time I checked, I'd be consistently handing out that good fantasy analysis. And yeah, it's late. Y'all basically got yourselves a bonus episode this week. So let's go ahead and get to it. All right, we are in week 14. That means everybody has played everybody in the league at least once by now. And we're getting close to that final stretch as we only have 8 weeks left before the fantasy playoffs. The trade deadline is approximately 5 weeks away, and that date is February 23rd, so start marking that down. And I gotta hand it to the NBA. We started off the week right for week 14. We had a great showcase day of games for MLK, and if you're like me, I work from home, but I took the day off. And even if you didn't take the day off, maybe you try to sneak some game footage on your phone. It was just nice to have games kind of all throughout the day, starting in the early afternoon. And the only game that was kind of a dud was the Memphis Phoenix game. And even with that one, we at least saw Brandon Clark go out there and catch a body with his dunk over Dario Saric. But in general, I appreciate all the NBA is doing for their job of promoting Dr. King's legacy, making sure that there's awareness out there for future generations. So I took in some basketball. I always try to make it a conscious effort to kind of watch a documentary just to kind of make sure I'm always appreciating what people have done before me, you know, the people that paved the way. Because I didn't have to get water hose. I didn't have to get dogs sicked on me. You know what I'm saying? The most I would have to do is put a hashtag post on social media or sit in my office in front of my microphone and do a podcast and say something. So I just want to make sure I'm always giving the proper respect to those that was out there in them streets really getting after it. But let's go ahead and get into some NBA news. And we'll start off with the All-Star voting that's in full force right now as we're halfway through the season. The last results show that the Eastern All-Star starting pool of players are Kyrie Irving, Donovan Mitchell, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum. I got no real complaint with that. Those results are fine to me. There's no egregious selections there. Donovan Mitchell, he recently suffered a groin injury and he'll likely be out for a week. And obviously, KD, he's out due to MCL sprain. If they keep their spots or they keep their slots as possible starters, they'll likely be replaced anyways. I'm thinking Jaylen Brown gets in. Joel Embiid, he's probably going to get in for Kevin Durant. Looking at the Western All-Star starting pool of players, currently Steph Curry.
Steph Curry, he's driving me crazy, and the Warriors.
Luka the Don Doncic, LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, and Anthony Davis.
I call him Anthony Street Clothes Davis because he's always in street clothes.
And I'm sorry, AD, I know that's a little disrespectful that you playing that drop when we talking about you being an all-star, but that's part of the reasons why I can start to poke holes in these results. First, you got Bron and AD, they're both coming from a losing team that's under 500 at this point. But again, this is All-Stars. It's not all NBA, so I don't really care too much about the team seeding. The All-Star game is more for entertaining the fans, and specifically the NBA's younger fans, those fans that are in that 10 to 16 year old age range. So if you're on a bad team, but you're a really good player, I don't really have a problem with you getting into the All-Star game. It's when we start talking about all NBA, that's when I feel like, okay, this is a much more prestigious honor and we got to kind of start nitpicking here with games played, qualifications, seeding qualifications, all that type of stuff. You can't be all NBA player and your team don't even make it into the play-in. But back to All-Star, the only real problem I have with the current results, that's AD. I do think there should be a games played caveat, kind of as a loose qualification for All-Star selections. And I get it. AD was playing like at MVP level status. So it's hard to say, hey, what you were doing is invalid because you've already missed half of the season. But he's already missed half of the season, basically. But like Durant and Mitchell from the East, If AD gets selected, he's probably going to be replaced due to the injury. I know it's probably not popular, but I like to see the finisher, Lauri Markkanen, or Domantas Sabonis get in as starters on the West. Now, Sabonis' game is not that attractive at all, but I don't know what's better than the great value version. But whatever's in between the actual name brand product and great value, whatever that is that's in between that, that is what Domantas Sabonis is when it comes to Jokic. He's whatever that version is of Jokic is. He's not too low to be great value, but he's not quite name brand yet. But he's right kind of in that sweet spot in that middle area. And Markkanen, he's just been balling. I don't know how he gets left out of this. He's probably not going to get left out of All-Star game, but hey, it'd be nice for him to be named as a starter for what he's been able to do and how well Utah's been able to perform this season. Anywho, if you got an opinion about it, you can go out there, make it known by participating in the voting process. All-Star voting closes on Saturday, January 21st. In other news, the NBA will also be on a colonizing mission in week 14 as they send the Chicago Bulls and the Detroit Pistons to Paris, France to play in their first NBA regular season game in that country. And because the Bulls and Pistons only have one game scheduled this week, and FYI, that is an early game because of the time difference, obviously. And that game is scheduled for Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time. So you want to make sure that you got your lineup set on time. But the NBA, they're doing a great job. It's great timing by them. Not only because I'm pretty sure they've been aware of Victor Wembanyama for years now. And this trip will highlight him even more because of the blatant French connection. But we also got French-born Killian Hayes, who has been playing some of the best basketball of his young career. So really, you just hope that it's not a blowout and the French get a good game. So that way, the NBA gets more fans, we get more money, which hopefully means we get expansion soon and get another two teams. And that will only make fantasy even more interesting. What's also interesting is how we choose to react to some of these recent injuries that popped up in week 13. We start off with Jalen Duren, who's been out since January 8th due to an ankle injury. Duren's injury, along with Isaiah Stewart missing three games in week 13 and Bojan Bogdanović missing a game, opened up a lot of opportunity for Sadiq Bey, and he balled out. During week 13, Bey averaged 22.3 points, 6.5 rebounds, 0.8 steals, and 2.5 three-pointers made at 39%. Nerlens Noel, he was also dusted off while Beef Stew was out. And he was a real solid option for streaming if you needed to get blocks and a few rebounds. But Stewart was back by the end of the week, so Nerlens will go back to receiving DMPs. So when we look at Jalen Duren's injury, it really probably is only beneficial to Sadiq Bey. Kelly Olynyk has been missing games since January 10th, and he's also been out with an ankle injury. And that's created a steadier diet of minutes for Walker Kessler. Since the injury, Kessler, he's been averaging 30 minutes a night and has performed well in that time. But I don't think that he's doing enough where Kelly Olynyk will lose his spot to Kessler. The odd man out is probably going to be Jared Vanderbilt. And that was the V8, y'all, because Vanderbilt, V for Vanderbilt, 8, because he wears the number 8, and he has a motor like a V8. Next up is Tyrese Haliburton. And since January, well, he injured his game in January 11th versus the Knicks. And he actually had two injuries, which is kind of sad. He injured his left elbow, which is a silver lining, I suppose, because it's not his shooting arm. And he also injured his knee, so he's not going to be reevaluated until 2 weeks. TJ McConnell, he's been the player that's benefited most. He already was a good source of assists and steals in limited minutes. But in the three games that Haliburton has missed, TJ has played 27 minutes a night and averaged 18.3 points, 6.7 rebounds, 9 assists, 2.3 steals, and 1.7 three-pointers made at 83%. The other guy you want to look at, and you probably want to grab him, is Andrew Nembhard. He had a short run at the beginning of December when Haliburton missed two games. And he hasn't been really able to like recreate that magic from those two games where everybody rushed out to get him. And remember, that's when he had hit that game winner versus the Golden State Warriors. But recently, he's been terrible. That's a little bit of a lie. He's been terrible when it comes to his efficiency. In the three games that Nembhard has played with Haliburton out, he's averaged 6.7 points, 7 assists, 1 steal, and 1.3 three-pointers made at 22%, while shooting a putrid 21% from the field on 11.3 attempts. So when I look at that, it doesn't sound too good. But the assists and the steal production is there. The minutes are there. He's getting 30 minutes a night. And the attempts from the field are there. So there's an opportunity for his scoring to go up. Nobody in the NBA is shooting 20% forever. Nembhard is not a guy that I believe is going to be shooting 20% forever. So even if he settles in at 40% from the field, which is still pretty bad, we're now looking at a guy that's giving you 7 assists, 1 steal, 1.5 three-pointers, and he's probably averaging somewhere between 11 to 13 points a night. So if you can stay in this little blip, this pocket of bad shooting that he's having right now, he's probably a useful add while Haliburton is out. Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's missed like 3 games now. He's been out since January 12th, and he's been out due to knee maintenance. And unfortunately, I think this is kind of one of them degenerative issues that stems from what looked like was going to be a season-ending injury that he had in the playoffs about 2 seasons ago, where his knee just went all the way backwards. And because of that, I think Giannis is going to forever have trouble with that knee, causing him to probably miss a minimum of 15 games a year. So while he's out, Bobby Portis continues to eat. And this is a nice opportunity for Joe Ingles, who's starting to show some sign of life. He's probably nowhere close to be playing back-to-backs, but when he does play, he's a guy that you probably want to put on your watch list because he should be a good source of assists and three-pointers made. Jaylen Brown has also been missing games since the 12th, and he has a right abductor strain, which is basically just a groin injury. And this guy, he consistently gets these groin and hamstring injuries. So I know it's fantasy. I know we want our guys playing, but I hope he takes the full time he needs to recover because we don't want to get a re-aggravation. He's already done that multiple times this season. He did that multiple times last season. I'm pretty sure if I look at the injury report from 2 seasons ago, he had multiple re-aggravations for a hamstring. So if he has to take an extra week to a week and a half to get right so that way he can just play the rest of the season, it's probably worth it for Boston in the long run. It's probably worth it for fantasy managers in the long run. But either way, Derek White, he's been the one to see their production increase while Jaylen Brown has been out. And finally, there's Kevin Porter Jr., who injured his left foot, and he's been out since January 13th. And weirdly, Kenyon Martin Jr. is the one that's really benefiting the most. And I know it probably seems a little bit weird because Porter is a point guard, and Houston basically uses Kenyon Martin Jr. as a 6'7 center. So I don't know how those two align, but for whatever reason, Kenyon Martin is getting more opportunity on the floor, and he's been performing well, averaging 15 points, 6.7 rebounds, and 1.3 three-pointers made at 33%. Let's go ahead and get into some league news. The results from the polling are in. There were 8 votes for the Reneg rule, so that initiative, that didn't pass. And really, that's okay, because as Cradle stated, it is something that doesn't happen often. But I do kind of like the concept of a stupid tax. However, the proposal for the IR spot being added to rosters, that did pass with the required 10 votes needed. And that change, that won't be implemented until the start of the 2023-24 season. And I know, man, when you look at some of these rosters, I know some of y'all were hoping that change would be applied right away. But of course, that wouldn't be fair to managers that suffered through long-term injuries at the beginning of the season and didn't have that option to just slot somebody in their IR. So yes, every team deals with injuries, but some people deal with it at the beginning of the season, some people deal with it in the middle of the season, some deal with the end of the season, some deal with it all the way through the whole season. So it's only fair to have the IR spot be available when we start a new season, so that way we all have the opportunity to use it when that inevitable injury bug comes and hits our team. So quick thanks to everybody that participated in the discussion on the message board and participated in the voting process. We do, however, have a trade that happened in week 13. So let me go ahead, crank up that trade machine, and we can examine what these two teams were trying to accomplish. The trade was between Tank Stoppers and Team Proof. Tank received Nikola Vucevic.
It's Vucevic.
I hear you, Perk. I had the same trouble with that name, but he sent Vucevic in exchange for Jonas Valanciunas.
Jonas Valanciunas.
And Thomas Bryant to Team Proof. Now, I already hinted at this in the last episode, but I don't really like the trade so much for Proof. And it's funny when you look at the evolution of Team Proof. When you look at like the first 7 years of this league's existence, Proof, he was making aggressive bets on rostering like injury likely players. You know, guys like AD or Zion Williams, Proof would have been all over those players because he was always making that bet on the upside value of a player. This season though, it kind of feels like he's kind of taking the opposite approach, and he's betting on players that have a high floor by basically betting against or betting on injury prone players staying injured. What do I mean by that? By trading for Valanciunas and trading for Thomas Bryant, he's betting against the health of Zion Williams and Anthony Davis. And I understand the bet. I kind of agree with it to a certain point, but I feel it's a dangerous gamble. I personally don't think Anthony Davis is going to be back until after the All-Star break. But this is an example of how this becomes a dangerous gamble, because Proof is probably thinking the same thing that I'm thinking, that it's going to take a while for Anthony Davis to get back on the floor. But we got a recent update stating that Anthony Davis does have a chance to return prior to the All-Star break. How much more prior? That's still up for debate. But if that's the case, Bryant's value may not last enough to really provide any return on investment for Proof to kind of get him back into that top eight. This gamble is only useful if Anthony Davis stays injured for a while. If Bryant can be that double-double guy that he's been with AD out of the lineup all the way through week 18, then the gamble's worth it. If we get to week 18 and then Proof has to drop Thomas Bryant, and let's be clear here, when Davis gets back to the Lakers, when he's back in the starting lineup, Bryant is no longer a rosterable player. This trade is for a short-term influx of stats. We all see what it takes for Davis to be unlocked, and that's playing at the center position. Plus, the Lakers are floundering. They're not even in the play-in situation at this point, and they got to put their best foot forward when Anthony Davis returns. They don't got any time to be messing around, so they're not going to waste time playing AD and Bryant on the floor for long stretches of the game because it doesn't work. It's not their best lineup. I'm assuming Team Proof has factored this in to the trade and already knows this. But again, if he can make it to week 18, there's only 3 weeks left in the fantasy regular season, and anything can happen then. So he just has to make it all the way through week 18. Bryant, if he's still a useful player all through that point, having two dominant big men playing right now can help turn his season around. It's a similar thought process when I look at Valanciunas. Proof is making a bet that Zion's going to have a tough time getting back on the court. But unlike Bryant, at least with Valanciunas, we know that he can stay on the floor when Zion gets back. He's just simply going to be taking a hit with the scoring. So as long as Proof is okay with taking that hit in the scoring, when Zion and AD return, even if he has to drop Bryant, he's probably going to at least break even with the rebounds. You look at Jonas, and in the 29 games where Zion has been on the court with him, he's averaging 13.1 points and 9.9 rebounds, while taking 9.9 field goal attempts at 50%. And in the 15 games that Zion has missed, Jonas is averaging 17.7 points, so there goes that bump in scoring that we're talking about, and the 9.5 rebounds, while taking 11.8 field goal attempts at 59%. For Tank Stoppers, he's hoping that AD gets back sooner than later, and when he does return, we're crossing fingers that AD can stay healthy. So losing the immediate impact of Thomas Bryant, that's not really a big deal when you're sitting in second in the standings with a 9-game lead in front of third place. Tank's got plenty of wiggle room at this point, so he could focus a lot more on future production. And because of that, when I look at the trade, especially from Tank Stopper's point of view, it boils down to upgrading from Valanciunas to Vucevic. So again, I get the motive for Proof. If he gets the upside production from these two players over the next 4 weeks, it could really help dig him out of the hole that he's in and get him back into that playoff picture. And cool, trade's worth it. Because we've seen this story. Again, once you're on that playoff bubble, anything can happen. Anything. Cradle and Proof, they proved that to us last season. It's the whole reason why Tank Stoppers has his name, you know. Last season, Proof was an afterthought to making the playoffs. Nobody thought he was getting in the playoffs until Cradle basically gifted him a berth. And then Proof parlayed that into getting into DHL Finals. And that's all we could ask for, a chance to win the championship. So although I don't agree with the trade per se, I got to respect the aggressiveness of Proof to at least give himself a chance. That makes this trade an interesting one to watch unfold in the long run. So as we wait to see what happens with that trade, let's go ahead, take us a quick break, And when we get back, we'll review the standings, check out a blowout of the week, and of course, we always got to check in with some fantasy sleepers. Welcome back. Let's go ahead and get into the league standings. At the top of the standings, SD moves into the top spot for the first time this season after a blowout victory over the hobbled Irrelevant. Largest movement up, that belongs to Cradle, moving from 10th to 7th in the standings after a 7-6 victory over his nemesis UG. And Cradle, the 6-time champ, he's quietly silenced the critics because he's currently on a 4-week winning streak. Y'all must have forgot. What they say, sometimes you gotta let sleeping dogs lie, man. But the largest movement down the standing, that dishonor, that belongs to Team Proof. And they've dropped from 8th to 11th in the standings after getting dismantled by Jive Turkey. And Proof is free falling at this point, as this is his now 6th consecutive loss. And that is the current longest losing streak in the league. And just to add more context on what a 6-week losing streak will do to you, at the end of week 7, Team Proof was sitting at first in the standings. First, top dog. After 6 weeks of losing, that man is now in 11th place. And of course, at the bottom of the standings, for the 4th consecutive week, Jive Turkey is at the bottom. And this is another example of how tough the league is. And it's really an example of why you got to take advantage of big wins when you can get them. Because it is hard to dig yourself out of a hole sometimes. Even after Jive has won their last two matchups in convincing fashion, he's still 2.5 games behind 13th. But you got to love the effort from Jive and the fact that he's far from tapped out. So I appreciate Jive and the fact that he ain't showed no quit. And I'm looking at the standings and there's some separation starting to take place. At the top tier, you got SD and Tank. Both of these teams, they could probably lose maybe 2-3 weeks in a row before they really start losing ground in the standings, especially if they avoid blowout losses. The next tier, though, is separated by 4 games, with UG sitting in 3rd and Elhan closing out the tier in 6th. Then you got the teams that I would say are kind of on that playoff bubble at this time, and that's teams that are in 7th through 11th in the standings. And that's a tight group right there because those teams are only separated by 3 games as well. And finally, in the bottom tier, the teams that are at most risk to get rotated out, that's Horsemen, One Piece, and Jive. And their tier is only separated by 2.5 games. So anything can still happen. These tiers are extremely close. And just because I've broken down the standings into tiers, that doesn't mean that that's where everybody is locked into. If you look at it more closely, the last place team is only 7 games out of the top 8. 2 more blowouts and they right up in that thing. And because I wanted to see, is this really just that much tighter this year than other years? I went and looked back at the standings 2 years ago. And at the same point in this season, the last place team, Commander HNIC, was 42 games behind the top team in Horsemen and 14 games out of 8th place. Last season, a little bit better. When we close out week 13, Too Legit was at the bottom, 34 games behind the first place team, Cradle, but only 15 games out of 8th. The point is, things are tightening up in the DHL. Nobody should feel too comfortable with where they're at. There's still plenty of basketball to be played and plenty of time to try to improve your roster. We had a couple candidates for the blowout of the week, so let's go ahead and get right into that. It's your blowout of the week.
I'm speechless. This game was beyond embarrassing. The worst game of the season. They looked awful. You know, they didn't execute. They didn't do anything right.
It's the blowout of the week. Week.
Now, I suppose the true blowout of the week should be the matchup between SD and Irrelevant. That ended up in a 11-12 prison rape. I had called my shot at the beginning of the week, And that matchup, we knew it was going to be a blowout. Plus, irrelevant, he didn't have Kevin Durant or Brandon Ingram available to them. So, all I did was do what I was supposed to do against an injured team. I took advantage of the situation, and I maximized it. But I'm not going to talk about that blowout. So, I do want to highlight some players from that matchup. For SD, I'm loving what Jaden Ivey brought to the table in week 13. In four games, he averaged 17 points, 4.8 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal, and 1.8 3-pointers made at 32%. For Ivy, let's see if he could put together another 7 or 8 games like this. If he can, then now we've seen a trend. And this may be the start to the breakout for the rest of the season. Because a lot of times for rookies, especially for rookie guards, it takes them a while to get the hang of things. And they normally finish seasons a lot stronger than they start. And if you want to look at a recent example, just look at the way Jalen Green finished out his rookie year with the Rockets. Starting on February 17th, over the last 25 games of the season, Green averaged 22 points, 3.1 assists, and 3.2 3-pointers made at 39%, while taking 17.2 field goal attempts at 48%. So we need to give it a little bit more time, but this may be that turning point for Jaden Ivey. For irrelevant, I continue to be impressed with Jordan Clarkson. That man, he's balling, man. He is having an excellent season. In week 13, he averaged 31 points, 9 rebounds, 3.3 assists, and 3 three-pointers made. However, this week's blowout honors belong to Jive Turkey with a 10-3 mass beatdown over Team Proof. And for Jive, this was all gas, no breaks in this matchup. They led it wire to wire. And folks need to start paying attention to Jive Turkey, man. He's starting to gain some momentum here. He ain't just no pushover that you just gonna go out and beat 9-4 by just setting your lineup. You look at some of the dominant categories for Jive Turkey, and he had a strong week. Field goal percentage, ranked first. Free throws made, ranked second. Three-pointers made, ranked second. Three-pointer percentage, ranked second. Points, tied for second with two legit. Excellent, excellent week. We look at the field goal percentage, and it's no wonder why he was at the top of the standings in week 13. His team shot a total percentage of 52.3% from the field, and the guards were on fire for Jive. Terry Rozier, 58% on 17.3 field goal attempts. Jordan Poole, 54% on 13 field goal attempts. Spencer Dinwiddie, 55% on 11.8 field goal attempts. Look at the free throws made. This squad knocked down 135 free throws made. And it's crazy because Jive had 5 players that averaged over 5 plus free throws made in week 13. 3 points made and 3 point percentage. Again, he ranked second in both of those categories. And of course, Terry Rozier, Poole, Dinwiddie, they all did their thing. They were hot from the field. They were hot from deep. But the surprise goes to Harrison Barnes, who averaged 4.5 three-pointers made at 64%. Now, we know that's unsustainable. Harrison Barnes, for a career, is averaging basically 38% from deep. But that's still really good. So if he's going to start increasing his volume, that's a shot that he's proving he can knock down. And as I stated, tied in second for points, 677 total points in week 13. And when you got 6 players, half your roster, averaging 20, it makes sense. Kyle Kuzma, 26.7 points. Harrison Barnes, 25.5 points. Terry Rozier, 25 points. Jordan Poole, 22.3 points. Spencer Dinwiddie, 20.8 points. And Benedict Mathurin, 20.7 points. And I know some people have given Jive a hard time for his trade, but look at it. Kyle Kuzma, Harrison Barnes, Terry Rozier, Jordan Poole, Benedict Mathurin, 5 of the 6 players that are averaging over 20 came from trades. So we may not agree with the way that Jive decided to build out his roster, but we can't act like this squad is devoid of talent.
I mean, that's the story of my life. No respect. I don't get no respect at all.
For Team Proof, it was a tough week. For Proof, he has no excuses, though. Not for this one.
Obviously, I'm mad that I lost, but hey, no excuses. No excuses.
Yes. Steph Curry, he probably needs a little bit more time to get back in the rhythm. But Proof, he had him available the entire week. So Curry was available. Bradley Beal, now he did miss all of week 13. But that's not the issue. The issue is that Proof hasn't done a great job of building out his team with any direction. Even with Curry on the squad, there's not one specific category that I could look at and say, Poole should be dominant in this category most weeks, except maybe personal fouls. There's nobody on his team that really fouls a lot. And again, as we spoke about when we were looking at the standings, Team Proof 7 weeks ago was standing at the top of the standings. Now, I don't even know when he'll win another matchup. So at one point, he did have something there. It's just that I think the complacency got to him where everybody else is kind of improving around him. And he's been more active as of late. But there was a time where we were 10, 12 weeks into the season and Proof had only made 6 moves the entire season. And I don't think anybody is that strong in this league at this point where you could just not make moves and expect to win consistently. Wasn't all bad though. The categories that they performed well in, blocks, turnovers, personal fouls. Proof had a total of 23 blocks, which put him in a four-way tie for third in that category. And this is a little fluky, this category, so it's not really anything that Proof can stand on. He got 4 blocks due to excellent ad at the end of the week where he picked up Isaiah Jackson. And without that ad, he loses the block category because he won that block category only with by 1 block, basically. He won by 1. So without those 4 blocks, now this turns into 11-2. And then also when you look at the category, Tobias Harris gave him 4 blocks in week 13, and DeAnthony Melton gave him 3 blocks. And those are 2 guys that you can't count on from week to week to give you a real boost in that category. Turnovers and personal fouls, he was 3rd lowest in both of those categories. And this is a lot to do with the fact that he's not really making a lot of moves. Now again, he's been being a little bit more attentive and trying to add some players here and there. But when I look at his roster, again, he's doing some things, but he's not being aggressive as I think he could be. Alec Burks, Bol Bol, DeAnthony Melton. These are all guys that could probably be adding drop slots. And I get that you don't want to panic, but you have been getting hammered. You've been getting hammered 6 weeks now in a row. Something is not meshing on this team. And yes, all 3 of those guys could be useful players, but on a night-to-night basis, they're probably not giving it to you. Probably better off just using them as add drop slots and just trying to maximize production at this point. Moving to the matchup player of the week. From the winning team, this award goes to Kyle Kuzma. In 3 games, he averaged 26.7 points, 6.3 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2.7 three-pointers made at 36%, while taking 20 field goal attempts at 48% and knocking down 4.7 free throws made at 88%. From the losing team, big ups to Russell Westbrook. He had himself a week. The guy, he seems to have bought into his role, is no longer the focal point of the Lakers' problems. And in week 13, he averaged 24.3 points, 9.4 rebounds, 7.7 assists, 1.3 steals, and 2 3-pointers made at 40%. We can no longer sleep on Russell Westbrook, just like we can no longer sleep on some of these fantasy sleepers from week 13. Let's go ahead and get into your fantasy sleeper of the week. This always puts me in a good mood, and I hope it does the same thing for you. But I know what's going to put you in a good mood is these fantasy sleepers, players that are rostered in 50% or less of Yahoo Fantasy Leagues, and we had a few of them getting things done in week 13. So if you're looking for a boost in production, look no further, because the fantasy sleepers got you. Out in Houston, Kenyon Martin Jr., the Rim Rattler. He's only rostered in 13% of leagues. In 3 games, he averaged 16.3 points, 6 rebounds, and 1.7 three-pointers made at 36%, while shooting 58% from the field on 11 attempts. Hopefully, Kenyon Martin can parlay this into more playing time, even once Kevin Porter Jr. returns to the lineup. Out in Minnesota, team's been a little underwhelming, but Kyle Anderson, slow-mo, he's out there trying to be a connector. He's only rostered 32% of leagues, and he's the guy that just gives you a little bit everywhere. He played in 2 of the 3 games scheduled for Minnesota. He missed 1 game due to sickness, but in that time he averaged 7 points, 4 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. down south, out in New Orleans. Najee Marshall, rostered in 48% of leagues. He continues to play well with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson out of the lineup. In three games, he averaged 17.7 points, 5.4 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and 1.7 three-pointers made at 39%. In Chicago, Alex Caruso, he's rostered in 38% of leagues. In four games, he averaged 8.8 points, 4.8 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 2 steals, 0.8 blocks from a guard, and 1.5 three-pointers made at 40%. For as well as Caruso's been playing, I don't think he's a hold for week 14, with Chicago only having one game on their schedule. But keep him on your watch list. In Indiana, opportunity is opened up, and we're looking at TJ McConnell, rostered in 47% of leagues. We already knew what he was about. It's like what they say about money. It don't change people, it just enhances who you already were. Well, with extra playing time, it's enhanced McConnell's production in the areas we already love, assists and steals. In three games, he averaged 13.3 points, 7.6 rebounds, 8.3 assists, and 2 steals. In Miami, he's starting to turn it around, and that's Max Strus. He's rostered in 41% of leagues, and he's been taking advantage of the opportunity with Kyle Lowry and Tyler Hero being out of the lineup. In three games, Strus averaged 14.7 points, 8 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and 2.3 three-pointers made. But as always, we can only have one, and that's in the land of the sun. From Phoenix, we're looking at Damian Lee, rostered in a measly 12% of Yahoo leagues. In Phoenix, they may not be getting their act together, but Damian Lee, he's trying to get himself noticed by fantasy managers. In three games, he averaged 21.3 points. 5.7 rebounds, 3.3 assists, and 2.7 three-pointers made at 53%, while knocking down a whopping 6.7 free throws made at 100%. So once again, Damian Lee, you are the fantasy sleeper of the week.
It's your fantasy sleeper of the week.
We're gonna go ahead and wrap it up there. And as always, I appreciate you guys spending some of your day with me talking about fantasy basketball. But this was Dr. King's week. We celebrated Martin Luther King Day on Monday. So I wanna go ahead and close out the podcast with a brief message from the man himself. I'll catch y'all next time.
As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black. I'm proud of it. I'm black and beautiful.